Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati and Marco Marquez on this Tuesday, January 31st, 2023. Let's say hello to our good friend Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Awesome. Fantastic.
Probably not much going on in your town these days, so, you know.
You know, it was great. Had a chance to cover the game on Sunday and do interviews after the game in the locker room. It was an incredible experience. And before we get into college basketball, you wrote about the big mistake made at the end of the game that allowed the Chiefs to have a more makeable field goal attempt. And it's funny that you made this comparison or brought this up, because I was watching some different videos. Every stage of the playoffs on YouTube, there was a video, like, say, going into the divisional round, 10 most heartbreaking divisional round losses. And they did that for every round. And at one point, I watched a little recap of the game between the Vontaze Burfict game between Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, and then you referenced that game and made that comparison to what happened on Sunday night with the Bengals and the hit out of bounds that gave the Chiefs another 15 yards they needed to win the game with a field goal. And so if you're looking for horrible, heartbreaking penalties that cost their team a playoff game, look no further than the Cincinnati Bengals, right?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. On Sunday night when I was watching the game and that happened, I mean, the parallel between those two plays, I don't think that there has been any other circumstance, in at least in the last decade and maybe ever, in which a team lost an NFL playoff game because it committed a personal foul and that put the opposing team in field goal range. And I don't think it's ever happened. And so when I said, hey, you know, I'd really like to write this, they said, well, the Mahomes column you proposed before about, you know, comparing, based, you know, how this is kind of our Willis Reed moment, you know, Willis Reed played in an NBA Finals Game 7 in 1970. And he had a torn thigh muscle, and everybody knew he was hurt, and he didn't really play great, but the fact he played was always credited with inspiring the Knicks to win that title and all that. And people still use it as a comparison, and it's great. I'm glad, you know, but like 90% of the people that use it weren't even alive then. And so I thought, you know, that was a column that we could write about. And so I proposed that, and then this came up, and I said, well, maybe I should do this. And they said, no, do the Mahomes one first, and if you want to do this second, go ahead about the penalty. And so I thought, okay, I'll do that. But I'm thinking, man, like, everybody's going to be writing about this, right? And I don't know if I missed it, but I haven't even seen anybody in the national media even make the parallel other than me. And it was so obvious. It was only 2016, 2015 season, 2016 playoffs, so we're talking 6 years ago. And I haven't seen anybody else bring it up. I was astounded by the fact that I was able to get that out of there before anybody else talked about it.
And look, hey, when your team loses a close game in the championship game, a step away from the Super Bowl, there's going to be some very angry, some very hurt feelings. We've been there. Chiefs have lost two AFC title games in overtime in the past 5 years. But, I mean, I saw some journalists, some people that cover sports suggesting, oh, you can't throw that flag there. That decides the game. And sometimes you hear that at the end of a college basketball game. Like, oh, you can't call that foul with a couple of seconds left, and that decides the game. How could you not throw a flag when that happens, Mike? I mean, there's no issue with the officials throwing that flag when they're supposed to, right?
It's a ridiculous concept to say that the official decided the game by calling a penalty that an athlete committed, whether it's a foul on a drive to the hoop or whether it's a player pushing the quarterback out of bounds and into the bench when he's already standing on the sideline or running across the sideline, I guess I should say. The player who made the penalty decided the game. The official's job is to officiate the same in the last minute as in the first. Any official who doesn't do that is bad at his or her job. It's that simple. Because it's the same thing. Like, okay, so you're a pitcher and you throw the ball down the middle of the strike zone, and the batter doesn't swing at it, so the umpire is not supposed to call it a strike because that decides the game. No, your job is to call the play, and it's in hockey they don't do that a lot of times. Sometimes in basketball, and in this occasion, you call the penalty because it was committed, and they did call it. I will say this: it has been really bothersome to me to read so many people in the national media tearing the officials apart for this game because they did they made a technical adjustment. They didn't really make the error. I don't know why the clock continued to run, but they caught it. And the person who caught it happened to be far enough away from the play that it was hard to get it stopped in time. So it looked bad, but it wasn't bad. And then were there missed calls? Sure. Do you want me to go through every NFL game in history that there were missed calls? That's every NFL game in history. The fact that they called the intentional grounding on Joe Burrow. Let's be honest about what happened. The announcer, Tony Romo, who was calling the game, who was analyzing the game, missed the penalty. As someone who often puts himself into the official's position, he missed it. It was obvious as soon as the ball left Burrow's hands because all you had to do was paying attention to the running back who was flaring out of the backfield well before he threw that ball. So there couldn't be a receiver in the area. And I saw P. Ryan go out that on a kind of wheel route on the left side, and I'm like, as soon as he released that ball into the ground, we've all seen guys throw those balls when there's a screen pass set up, and they get away with it because there's a guy right there because it's a screen pass. But P. Ryan was already 10 yards down the field, and he may have been curling back, but he wasn't in the area because he left. And so Romo didn't see it. He said it was a good throwaway, and everybody took their cue from him, as they always do from the person who's doing the game analysis.
Amen. We were shouting about
preach
it watching the game. There was actually a couple of other intentional groundings that Burrow got away with that they didn't talk about as well. But that, like you said, calls get missed through the course of a game. One of the analogies I had, Mike, there was an interception earlier in the game in which Brian Cook, the safety for the Chiefs, I can't remember who the receiver was now, but he arrived like a half second early, Hayden Hurst. And he hits Hurst, and the ball pops up into the air, and the Chiefs get an interception. And it correctly gets overturned because it's pass interference. He got there early.
Right.
And it's like, to me, it's the same thing. Oh, you're going to call that? You're going to call that in the AFC Championship game? You got to let them play a little bit. You can't let the refs decide the game. I mean, that, is that what people are just so silly to see, like, to see a freeze frame of Mahomes clearly out of bounds getting hit and then actually have people suggest that it shouldn't get called? I don't know. The whole thing made me laugh. The other, but I do think this is interesting, Mike. Out of your two columns, I'm looking at them back-to-back tweets that you put up. The one about the hit out of bounds has gotten twice as much engagement as the one about Mahomes playing on one ankle. And is that because, in your mind, people are more interested in hearing about the guy that screwed up than they are about the hero playing on an injury? Or is it because nobody wrote about that connection to Burfict? What do you make of that fact? Because I do kind of feel like Mahomes is almost still not quite getting that Willis Reed credit that that you talked about.
Yeah, I think it's always controversy is going to draw attention, and I think that's a big part of it. And you know, I when I wrote that about Mahomes, I got all kinds of feedback about how it wasn't really that big a deal, how he was listed as a full participant in practice all week, and so it wasn't that big a deal. And look, I wasn't spying on the Chiefs' practices or anything. I don't know if they're open to reporters now or not, but I wasn't there. But at this time of year, full participant means you're like walking. Like, they're not hitting anybody now, you know? I mean, it's January 28th or whatever when they're playing the game. Nobody's hitting anybody. You know, they might run some routes to make sure they keep sharp and all that, but it's different now. You know how to play football if you're this far along, and the one thing that they want to do is go in on Sunday and make sure that, like, all 50 guys are as healthy as they can possibly be. So if he was a full participant, he wasn't in a full participant in much more activity than I was sitting at my computer writing about.
Mike DeCourcy is our guest. I just retweeted those columns at SSJWHB. You can follow Mike at TSN Mike. You can read both of those out there. All of our Chiefs fans listening to the segment. Okay, Mike, let's move on to college basketball. We kind of ignored it yesterday because it was the day after the Chiefs had won the AFC Championship. But there's a lot going on in college basketball with the local teams we wanted to talk to you about. And before we get into the Sunflower Showdown tonight in Lawrence, I wanted to ask you about Missouri's big win over Iowa State on Saturday. So, and it wasn't just impressive that they beat a good Iowa State team. It was how they beat them. Very, very impressive. 78-61. Now Isaiah Mosley is playing, and he looked like he was going to be the crown jewel of the class as far as the transfers coming into this game. Now he's playing regular minutes. They're getting something out of Mo Diarra, who's a 6'10 JUCO transfer who didn't hardly play at all in the first half. Now he looks like he's an important piece. So it's been very interesting to watch Missouri as they've developed into what they are right now. What did you think about their 17-point victory over Iowa State?
It was like the one unfettered blow for the SEC against the Big 12. Mississippi State beat TCU, but Mike Miles got hurt like 30 seconds in. So it was like, it helps Mississippi State, but it was clearly not the full TCU team, and it still went into overtime. I think if Miles plays that game, they get that. But this was a complete, total butt-kicking by an SEC team over a Big 12 team, and that in a challenge series that saw Alabama, one of the top teams in the country, go into Oklahoma and get clocked by 24. It was really important for the SEC to save some face, so to speak, and it maybe even more so. I don't think that's what Mizzou had in mind. I think they just were trying to get themselves to the NCAA tournament, and it was enormous in that respect. That was a huge win for the Tigers. A big-time win against a team that, to that point, I had somebody last week trying to sell me them as a one-seed candidate, and it was a fellow bracket person online tweeting about how Iowa State should have been a one-seed, and then they go into to play Mizzou, and they just get hammered. The Tigers didn't just squeak out a win there, which would have been a respectable result under the circumstance. I mean, they dominated that game pretty much from the beginning to the end. a great performance from them on a day when it, you know, against an opponent when it would have been easy to be overmatched. That's the way it had been for just about everybody else in their league, either overmatched or outplayed. And in this case, the overmatching and outplaying was both on the Tigers' side.
Also, Mike, of course, Kansas beats Kentucky, and I got to give credit to our guy Marco over here. We were goofing around last week and setting lines before they came out on these games, and Marco had Kansas as a 5-point favorite at Kentucky, and I laughed him out of the room, said you're insane. Of course, the line ended up, I think, being Kentucky by what was it, Marco, 2 or 3 points. Kentucky had won 4 games in a row, including at number 5, Tennessee. Kansas had lost 3 games in a row. But they go to Kentucky and win the game 77-68. What did you make of that performance by KU?
I thought that Bill did a really good job coaching that game, X and O-wise. Obviously, he's a tremendous coach. He's one of the best that's ever done it. But in that particular game, putting Jalen Wilson basically on the ball for a lot of the second half and forcing the Wildcats to deal with how do you guard that now? If DeJuan Harris was running those ball screens, I think at a certain point they'd have said, go ahead, you beat us. If you can do it, you do it. And DeJuan's instinct is not to do it. So I think they would have felt like they would have had an advantage there until at least DeJuan finally embraced the idea, if he ever did, that he's going to have to take this on. Well, putting Jalen in those ball screens, they were able to force then Kentucky to find some way to cope with that, because if you say to him, go ahead and beat us, he does, and it's over. And so they're trying to figure out how to deal with it, and they never did. And whatever they tried eventually wound up opening somebody that Kansas wanted to have the basketball, whether it was McCullough making the one shot from the far side. They had Grady obviously made a big one. They were able to do that time after time, and Kentucky never figured out a way to cope with that. I think there might have been some ways Kentucky could have, and Kentucky was able to be proficient scoring for the most part, I think, late. And I'm not sure whether this was, I didn't notice anything different. And Bill, you know, is probably laughing, thinking, oh, yeah, I did. I didn't see an adjustment defensively late that led to Kentucky going away from Oscar Tshiebwe on the right block. They had great success with that for most of the game, and then late they just didn't get the ball to him. And then there was at least one, probably 8 or 9 minutes left, where C.J. Frederick had the ball. It was his defender in front of him only, and Oscar with his guy at his back. Whether it was a KJ at that point or his backup, I don't know. But he had a guy at his back, and he was probably only about 3 feet off the block. It was a perfect position. And C.J. Frederick walked away from that, and they ended up turning over the ball. So there were options for them to get the ball, and ultimately they just kept going in different directions because throwing the ball in the post is a little risky sometimes. And so they chose not to do it, and they took shots themselves and didn't make them. So that helped the Wildcats stretch it out a little bit. But the main thing was the activity with Jalen into that ball screen, and then Kentucky really not knowing how to deal with it and finding an appropriate defensive response.
Okay, Mike, and then we got to talk about K-State. They in the SEC Challenge get it's almost like a ho-hum win, 64-50 over Florida. And I think the fact that you could even say that statement indicates why K-State's one of the best, if not the best, story in college basketball this year, because they were picked to finish last in the Big 12. they were not supposed to have a ho-hum win against any major conference team. They are 18-3. You know, they have a chance, if they could beat Kansas tonight, to be tied for first place in the Big 12 at the halfway point in the season. And at the very least, they're in like a 4-way tie for second place at the end of tonight at the halfway point in the season. I just wonder if you can put into context, and I realize we now live in an era where teams can turn things around more quickly because of the transfer portal and all that, but still, to have a first-year head coach in a team that was supposed to finish last in the Big 12 where they are right now, how big of a story is this in college basketball this year?
Well, it's the reason that you're talking about Jerome Tang being the leading candidate for National Coach of the Year. And when I say you, I don't mean just you guys in Kansas City or the folks 2 hours down the road in Manhattan or even just me. I mean, it's just about everybody that does what I do or something similar. Jerome is the leading candidate right now for National Coach of the Year. And there will be others that emerge. And obviously, K-State has to continue to an extent to do this or something similar to this in order for that to come to fruition. But that's the embodiment of what is being accomplished over there. The fact that he's being talked about in that way. Because it is amazing, even in an era when you can build a team quickly through transfers. You know, it's funny, when someone does what Jerome is doing, you look at it and you say, well, yeah, but look, he's got multiple players, especially one star player, Keyonte Johnson, who are new to the program, and all of a sudden it's blossoming. Well, yeah, and then you, other places, well, don't blame me for losing in November because I had all new players. I mean, that's what you hear. You hear, well, you know, we didn't do great in November, December because we had three transfers and we were trying to work them in. Well, okay, which is it? I mean, do you turn it around quickly because you got new guys and they can ball? Or is it hard to do that because they're new and they haven't completely integrated into your system yet? I think that it says a lot about what Jerome has been able to do and what K-State, and, you know, I don't just give him the credit. The players have to accomplish everything they're asked to do on the floor, and they have to react to situations and circumstances that arise during those 40 minutes. And they have to do that with guys that had been unfamiliar to them as players prior to this season. So it's a remarkable accomplishment for them, too. It is one of the best stories in college basketball. But I was asked what the best story by I was on a radio in East Lansing. I was asked what the best story in college basketball is, and I said it's Keyonte Johnson being able to come back from what he came back from. I think it's just absolutely wonderful that he's being able to have this experience, that have this success. His teammates can enjoy being with him on the floor after everything he went through. I think that was only, you know, what, two plus years ago in Florida when he was playing for the Gators. To be able to do that is just wonderful to see.
All right, before we let you go, and I remind people, pregame's at 5:30 and the tip-off is at 7 o'clock tonight right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. What do you expect from Chapter 2 of the Sunflower Showdown between Kansas and Kansas State? This time it's in Lawrence.
Yeah, well, I remember the last Mizzou-KU game at Allen before the split. I was there. It was the single loudest environment I had ever been in at any athletic event. I think I might have told you guys this before, but someone listening might not have heard this. At tip-off, it was so loud in Allen that I laughed out loud and I could not hear my own laugh. That is literally true. That's how loud it was. And I expect that tonight. I think that's what we'll see, because this is a gigantic game for both teams. This is a game that says what KU season ultimately will be relative to its the chase for the championship in the league, seeding in the NCAA tournament. If KU wins this game, they're back to being a one seed candidate, if not on the one line. Obviously, it depends on what the teams that are on there do. If they don't, it's going to be hard to get there. Not impossible. February changes a lot, but a lot of people would have to help them by taking steps backward. If they win it, they're right there. If K-State wins it, they may knock, I think they will, at this stage, knock Houston off the top line if they can get this game. So the stakes are about as high for a game in February can be. And we're not even in February yet, so scratch it. As high as a game in January can be. That I think it's a great matchup. They're very similar teams in a lot of ways. you've got it, they're different in the sense that DeJuan is a steadying force type point guard, really good at both ends, doesn't take a lot of shots. And Marquise Noel is obviously a dynamic guy who gets a lot going offensively, whether it's him or his teammates. So they're different in that respect, but they are similar in the respect that neither team's size is an important component of its success. One team has to kind of play through the fact that it's not particularly tall. The other side has some height, but doesn't, you know, it's not an enormous part of what they do. It's good to have it, but it's, you know, most of what happens still happens through the perimeter. So they have similarities in that respect. And it's one of the reasons why it's a fascinating matchup, and one of the reasons it's really frustrating that a game at this level is not on national television. You can get it everywhere through the internet, but it's just amazing that a game between two of the, 10, at the very minimum, two of the 10 best teams in the country is not going to be nationally televised.
Mike, you can also always listen on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Just fly in here and enjoy us. Hey, Mike, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
That's Mike. Mike, of course, he can do it all. Football, soccer, basketball, whatever.
That's right.
He's one of the best. And so read his two columns about the game. At TSN Mike is his handle on Twitter. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. The Bengals all week were acting cocky, but it was the Chiefs that ended up being rocky because they knocked Cincinnati out. And to talk about that, we have former Chiefs offensive lineman Joe Valerio. Joe, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you? It's a great day here in Philly. You know, my two favorite teams. And I think the two best teams in the NFL. It's funny how it all kind of worked out, right? Two number one seeds, and you know it's going to be. I was chatting with Marco before coming on. I think this is going to be. You were talking about talking trash. The Bengals, the Chiefs kept a low profile prior to the game. They let it simmer and they let it boil, which was fantastic. They kind of, like Rocky said, they stoked the fire without letting it consume them. And that's the way this Chiefs team operates. I mean, obviously we had the Justin Reed issue with the one time that the organization kind of let something like that slip. But for the most part, 9 times out of 10, the Chiefs are a team that just kind of come out there and they follow along in those Marty, Dick Vermeil, Trent, and now in Andy Reed, that tradition of just kind of let your pad do the talking, which I love. That's what I love about this team. And I think I kind of see the same thing with the Eagles too. So I don't think we're going to see anything remotely like we saw with the mayor of Cincinnati and players and different Burrowhead and all that stuff. I think this is going to be a game where two well-respected heavyweights are going to show up in the ring, punch gloves, wish each other well, and then get after it.
Yeah, the Chiefs pretty much kept quiet except for the one hiccup where Nate baited Willie Gay into saying he wasn't impressed with the Bengals offense, but that... That's Nate. Hey, that's Nate. We get it. Right. Joe.
Not to interrupt you. Sorry to interrupt you, Steve, when a player says something like that, that just comes from film study. I don't think it wasn't at one player. It was kind of like recollection on what he thinks of the team. I don't know if that was but that was a good bait though, by the way.
You offer us the unique perspective of your ties to Kansas City and the Chiefs, but you live in Philadelphia. I'm just out of curiosity, what's being said? How's this being viewed here? At least this is looked upon as a terrific matchup between the one seeds that are evenly matched. So many great storylines, from Andy Reid going up against his former team, the Kelce brothers. The top two candidates for MVP, all of it on paper, just looks fantastic. What's being said based on what you've heard so far out in Philadelphia?
Respect. The Philadelphia Eagles have a ton of respect for the Kansas City Chiefs, and there's a huge Chiefs contingent out here. You know, I mean, Vahe Gregorian did a piece and covered the KC Star a week or so ago, you know, talking about this possibility, right? Kind of getting ahead and saying this could happen, you know? And there's, we always used to call it, you know, Kansas City or Philadelphia West. We used to call Kansas City. There was so many connections going all the way back to the Carl Peterson era and Herm Edwards, Carl Hairston, John Bunning as coaches and scouts. Terry Bradway's a Philly guy. He was head of personnel. You know, you had Carl, you had people in the business office, Lynn Stiles, head of pro personnel, like who was a former Eagles guy. Like, and then it just continued, you know, with Dick Vermeil and players, tons of players, Bill Moss, Kevin Ross, Todd McNair, myself, Matt London. I mean, we just had so many Philly guys that just kind of associated themselves with Kansas City. So it's really, there's a lot of connections, and it just continued, you know. And this one is going to, I think it's going to play out well from that perspective, in that there's a lot of mutual respect for these two teams. You know, Philly definitely probably has, at all the way up to the top, through the coaching staff, probably has a little bit more, and I don't mean this in a bad way for Kansas City, but in a Philly way, they have a little bit more swagger in the way they go about things. You know, Nick Sirianni's got a little bit of that swagger, that Philly kind of rough and tumble, you know, where the Chiefs are much more, you know, refined. So not that they don't have swagger or confidence, but just, you know what I mean? It's that subtle difference between the grittiness. Look, the Flyers, you know, mascot's name is Gritty, some wacko character that, you know, nobody even knows what he is.
He's fantastic, though. I could tell you that he is fantastic.
Yep.
He's Philly. He symbolizes and just epitomizes like what representation of what Philly is. It's just a gritty town. You know, Marco, which we were joking about, like he said, are the Eagles going to be the Drago of this Rocky match? And I was like, look, they're not training on, you know, high-tech treadmills and shooting steroids. I mean, they eat cheesesteaks and hoagies and tasty cakes.
Tasty cakes.
You know, which is a Philly bakery. Yeah. You guys know what tasty cakes are, right?
You know why we know what tasty cakes are?
That was Nate's nickname back at KU. That's why. He loves it.
Wasn't it another Philly-Kansas City connection, quarterback coach Dick Curl, right? Was that what position he was?
No, Dick Curl was the Father Time. Remember the management?
Yeah, Father Time. Yeah, right, Dick Curl. Wasn't he the one that taught us about tasty cakes on the show?
It was Terry Shea.
It's Terry Shea. Why did I think it was Dick Curl?
I don't know.
Yeah,
it was. I wish Dick Curl would be on the show. Trust me, but no.
I thought we had him on the show.
Maybe
that's funny, but clearly, Terry Shea told us about tasty cakes, and he actually like shipped us a box of them.
They're my bet. So I'm sorry, Nick.
No. You, our audience, that was years and years and years ago. So tell our audience about Tasty Cakes real quick.
Well, they're a, you know, homemade bakery treat here. They're mass produced, so they're not. It's not like a bakery that you would go into. But they have a good feel to them. They have interesting. They have these peanut butter candy cakes, which are like peanut butter and chocolate, and a nice sponge cake. You know, enveloped in chocolate. They have butterscotch crimpets. They got jelly crimpets. They've got the just straight up cupcakes with the fondant type icing on top, and they come in 3-packs, 2-packs, and they're what I ship to people whenever I have a bet between something Philly and, you know, somewhere else. Like, for example, I had tasty cakes and rice-a-roni. We had a tasty cakes and a San Francisco treat of rice-a-roni bet between the 49ers and Eagles game with a colleague of mine out in San Francisco. So tasty cakes are they're definitely. They've gone sort of regional, semi-national. I think you can see them in some supermarkets and stores around the country, but they're really a Philadelphia treat. And but that's what we train on here, you know, and that's what you go into a Wawa. There's another thing that people in Kansas City are going to have to get used to if they've watched Mayor of Easttown.
Yes.
That, you know, if they watch that show, like Wawa is the Quick Trip of the East Coast, and they're expanding into Texas and Florida, but there's, you know, they're up to 1,000-plus stores now. But you go in there, you get a hoagie, you get it, whatever you need, get your tasty cakes, get your coffee. But Wawa is a Philadelphia staple. And it's a, you know, started with one convenience store right in my hometown where I grew up in Ridley. and then expanded. Now they've got thousands of stores all over the country. So it's a you know, another thing that Kansas City fans will get used to, as Philadelphia fans are going to get used to, you know, Arthur Bryant and Gates and all the great barbecue that happens out there. And you know, I think, like I said, I think this is going to be a really fun game. I don't foresee trash talking. I think you got the Kelce brothers that are going to maybe smooth that out, right? Because nobody's going to be talking. I think they have respect for each other. I guess this is the best way to sum it up. I think these teams are going to go out and really have a lot of respect. And, you know, I've been following the Eagles my whole life. You know, I do a spot every Wednesday night with a local Philadelphia radio station, just chop up football a little bit. We always talk Chiefs, you know, because of the connection, and try to give my insight into what the Eagles are. So I've got a pretty good insight into what this team is like, who they are, and, you know, having followed them for so long.
We'll get more in depth next week when we're in game week. But just, I guess, first blush, who do you like in this matchup? How do these teams match up once they get on the field together?
I think there's a lot of, if you were to take this as like a puzzle, I think it fits together really well to have a really close game played. You know, I think, you know, the Chiefs, let me start with the Eagles defense, right? Which their defensive line is fantastic. And they're, you know, they're going against one of the top, if not the top, offensive lines in the NFL with the Chiefs, and vice versa, right? You look at what Chris Jones and Nadi and all the guys, what they did on the front, you know, pressuring Burrow, getting the sacks they needed when they needed to. And then you like couple it with the Eagles offensive line, which is, you know, again, arguably one of the best, if not the best, offensive lines, spearheaded by obviously Travis's brother Jason and, you know, Lane Johnson, who's, you know, forewent surgery so that he could play through the playoffs. And they're a solid group. So I think they just like meet, they just every strength. Well, there's a reason why both these teams were number one seeds, right? They have strength at every single, you know, position that match up well against the other team's, you know, opposing force in that area, right? So I think Jalen Hurts is a little bit of a different quarterback than Patrick. So, you know, as players practice against Patrick, you know, on the one side of the ball, or they look at to other players they've played against, I don't think the Chiefs will have seen a whole lot like Jalen Hurts. You know, the RPO that they're running is probably the thing that is most different about this Eagles team that we're going to have to analyze over the course of the next 2 weeks, and the fans are going to have to keep their eyes on, is how do the Chiefs manage that RPO? If you watch the game, and I hope everybody did, just kind of in preparation of us winning and meeting up with the Birds, you know, that RPO was, you saw some of the big runs that they were able to break with running backs that are good, right? They're good running backs. You know, Gainwell and Miles Sanders are outstanding. They're good, but they're not Barry Sanders, and they're not Walter Paytons, and they're not Jamaal Charles-type running backs or Derrick Henry. So the RPO just allows them to do so much, and I think that is going to be – that's what I think the Eagles are going to try to use as their secret sauce to neutralize our fantastic defense with the Chiefs, especially up front on the line with Chris Jones and Frank Clark, and with the awesome linebacking core that we have. They're gonna try to do everything they can to freeze those guys so they can make plays either running or, you know, with the intermediate pass game that Jalen's become pretty adept at. So that's probably the thing, if I had to pick one thing 2 weeks out that is very different, is that the Chiefs haven't seen, it's the RPO, and that the fans, unless they've watched the Eagles, will be surprised to see how effective that RPO can be if they give Jalen the free will to run the ball. Because he, in this past game against 49ers, you saw that debacle. That was a disaster for the 49ers. I mean, you know, I think they were pulling somebody's old gym teacher out to play quarterback at one point out of the stands. You know, they were able to really gash a really, really solid defensive front with the RPO. But what they were doing with Jalen is they were kind of running him to the outside. He did very few, like, off-tackle RPOs. And he mostly kind of skirted to the outside just so they knew it was in the repertoire. But I think they were still, once they knew the game was getting out of hand, they were pushing him to the outside where he could kind of skirt and get out of bounds without really taking any hits. This game, all on the line, I'd imagine you're going to be running the RPO wherever they need Jalen to run it, up the middle, off tackle, or outside. So it's I think that's, again, I'm sorry to beat this point up, but I think that's going to be the thing that I've seen over the course of this season for the Eagles that will give the Chiefs the most fits.
From the perspective of an offensive lineman, how would you describe the performance Chris Jones had? Because he was, I mean, it didn't matter where they lined him up. He was a handful, more than a handful, for any offensive lineman on the Bengals squad. Everyone's talked about Mahomes and the leg and the penalties and everything else, but Chiefs don't win that game without Chris Jones.
He was fantastic. I mean, you know, he's a guy that Spagnuolo was a master in this game, and I said it. I said it a couple of times throughout the week in preparation for this game that I felt like the pressure of this game rested solely on the defensive shoulders. That was my opinion going in. And obviously, that was the case, right? With Patrick, you know, you could still tell he was hurt. Come on, let's all be honest. Did he have the game of his life? Absolutely, he was amazing. But you could still tell he was nursing that leg. You know, Travis is a game time decision. Wide receivers are going down, and it only solidified my thought that this was going to be a defensive game for the Chiefs. And I said the game was going to be 21-20. The Chiefs are going to win that game, and I was darn close. And because I didn't think there was going to be a lot of points, because I knew the defense was going to be ready and Patrick was going to be, for lack of better terms, limited. And I can't say that I haven't seen a more gutsy performance in my time watching football than I saw Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce with those, just playing through the pain and the injuries that they have. That's amazing stuff. But I knew that this was going to be on the defense, and it was. And Chris Jones stepped up. So what Spags did is he really did a great job of finding ways to get Chris Jones singled up on players. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I always watch for. When there's something for the listeners to watch for from an offensive line perspective. Watch where this on pass plays. You know, watch where the center points. Now, sometimes the center will do a dummy call and they'll point to a linebacker. And they'll, like, you know, they'll say 52, and you can see them, right? You can see Creed, like, pointing. He'll be like, 52, 52. What he's saying is that's the strong side linebacker, and that's the way that we're pushing the protection. So in a four-man front, the uncovered lineman is sliding to that player, right, to take the blitz if it comes, right? So if 52 comes in through the B gap, the center will push the guard onto him, or if he comes in the A gap, the center will take him. So what that does, guys, in a four-man rush with a linebacker pointed to, on the other side of the ball, think about it. Now you're singled up, right? You've got two guys on two guys. If the center's going left, the right guard and right tackle have to single up on the two defensive linemen over them. I always watch for that because I want to see who's getting singled up, right? When you're playing against the 49ers, for example, you're trying to single up Joey Bosa, right? You want him to be one-on-one with a tackle, right? That's what you want. You want him on the outside. You want the center going the other direction so you can't bump down the line and double-team him. So, long answer to a short question, that's what Spags, I think, did masterfully. He was able to set the defense, push players away from Chris Jones, so that he could get the singled up blocks, and I think it was masterful the way he did it. And that's why he was moving them around, so they never knew where he was going to be. So sorry for the long-winded concert on offensive line play, but that's something I always look for. Where is the center going, and who has the single blocks, and do you have your best defensive lineman going one-on-one?
Hey, Joe, before we let you go, and we'll talk more about the game next week leading up to the Super Bowl, tell people again about the podcast and where they can listen to it.
Oh, sure. Believe in Chiefs, BLEAV, at Joe Valerio 73. You can follow along. And my partner, Jeff Fedotin, writes for Forbes Magazine, Kansas City Native. We cover all things Chiefs and all things NFL. So really fun stuff to talk about. We're going to have a lot of fun this week for sure.
Joe, thank you so much for the time, and enjoy some tasty cakes this week, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Definitely, guys. I'll get the address from Marco. We'll send some out.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. That is Joe Valerio.
It was Dick Curl that gave it to us.
I have no idea if it was Dick Curl or not.
I just couldn't remember what coaching position he had, but it was him. We had him.
He coached quarterbacks but he was Father Time for Dick Vermeil.
Yeah. And he was awesome when he came on the show with us. We were just excited because we were going to have Dick Curl on the show, but then he turned out to be super awesome, and he was the one that taught us about tasty cakes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember no knowledge of him being on the show.
Your memory is typically way better than mine on things like that.
Right. Which still questions whether or not he was on the show or not. Because I'm not taking your word for it.
Oh, that's fair.
How are you so sure? No.
I looked up his bio and him being from Chester, Pennsylvania, and I remember talking to Dick Curl about Tasty Cakes.
Was I on the show?
Yeah, I think so. Because he sent us a box of Tasty Cakes. Or maybe I ordered them. I think I might have ordered them just online because he told us about
them. I thought it was a lady that set that up for us.
Well, we also ended up talking to Casey McDonald about Tasty Cakes at one point in time as well, but that was later on.
Yeah, I have no idea. I just remember Terry Shea was a quarterback's coach who wrote a giant book about quarterbacks. He used to come on the show all the time.
Yeah, he was great.
You know, we've had a few quarterback's coach. But yeah, I hope Dick Curl was good on the show. I have no memory of it, but I also have no memory of where my keys are. So there you go. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's check in with Gary Lezak. Gary, it's too cold. Fix it.
Did you get back to the bathroom fast?
I was walking around the hallway because my back tightened up on me. So.
Oh, okay. There you go. So you were pacing. Were you pacing during the last 2 minutes of the Chiefs game?
No room to pace in the press box where we're sitting.
That's
so.
Right. You were in the press box.
I was
pacing. I got a couple miles in the last 2 minutes, I think. Oh, my goodness. Wow. Unbelievable. I'm still pinching myself. I cannot believe
Stop
it.
Stop pinching yourself, then.
I'll stop. The Chiefs are in the Super Bowl. I cannot believe it. Can you?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
With Patrick Mahomes, I almost just expect it.
Yes, sir.
Is it? But we've learned. Have we learned how valuable this is? How incredible this is? I mean, you know what the alternative is. We felt that last year. I mean, it's just crazy. You get so close, but they're in, and they can beat the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, who is the Philadelphia Eagles playing? It's interesting, and you know they're underdogs. So it's a good role to be in, I think. What do you think?
You know, I went through this with Lebo on Sunday when we were watching the game. The Philadelphia doesn't it like who's what's their best win? Who's their best win? The Chiefs' best win was just happened Cincinnati in the Huge. Championship game. But I mean, it's you know, I the only thing I'll say is. The quarterbacks they had to go through, I don't know if you'll ever see a team get an easier set of quarterbacks to you know beat these quarterbacks to get to the Super Bowl. Daniel Jones, Brock Purdy, and Josh Johnson.
Yeah.
They earned the spot, the number one seed, but that's living right.
And we experienced the first half until the interception right before the 2 minute warning when the Chiefs and Mahomes had three weird passes and we didn't run the ball and run some clock and they gave Burrow a chance to get 80 extra yards at the end of the half and almost get a touchdown we experienced greatness. I mean, the Chiefs look that good, and we've experienced that the last 5 years since Mahomes got here, with Andy Reid. And so we've seen these great moments for about a quarter and a half, and then they slip into some other mode. And it's obviously other teams make adjustments. So Andy Reid hopefully can anticipate some of those adjustments as we go through this game. But my gosh, when the Chiefs are on, they're on. What is the status on these injuries? Do we have a list?
No.
A whole list?
Andy Reid has no status. The game's not for 2 weeks. It's too cold outside. Now fix it.
Okay.
Everybody's day by day.
All right. So I'm sure we'll iron
like the
that
weather.
All out. We'll iron that out within a week. It's 9 degrees. 9 degrees right now. 11 degrees downtown. 9 degrees at KCI. 11 degrees downtown. There is literally almost no wind. The flags are limp this morning. They're literally, they're just hanging low. expect temperatures to surge towards near 30 degrees this afternoon, and there'll be just a very light breeze all day long, so it's going to be a nice winter day. Tomorrow up to near 40, and then close to 50 by Thursday. So we're on a warming trend heading this way as we get the Super Bowl hype, and I can't wait and love every minute of it listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB. There's your forecast. Again, today's high near 30 degrees. How about those Chiefs? Talk to you guys tomorrow.
That's Gary Lee, Zach. We'll be back after this on WHB.